Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as virtually always, the Chang to my Khan and the Bourne to my Bond, it's Dan.
Good evening. Good evening, Scott.
I thought you'd like that I worked in not one but two Trek references and also got two of the three biggest spy film franchises in the world there, so I was pretty proud of that one.
Yeah, Chang, he's a good guy.
Yeah, I believe he's going to get brought up briefly in one of our episode coverage thingies tonight. So I was pretty proud of that one. But not as proud as I am to roll out the carpet for our mini all-star squad this evening. So let's say hi to Vicky and Jason, I guess.
Hi.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to episode 129.
I love it.
Unfortunately, we're not going to be joined by Cade tonight. He was going to participate in this podcast, and we actually recorded late, so he could join us, but I guess he decided he wanted to spend the night writing fan fiction about the Season 4 Arrow Leon Yu flashback storyline, so I guess it's more important than talking to us, but
it's more important than anything. The flashbacks, they're so good.
That's awesome. You know, we picked up a new listener this week, and I got a little feedback on it, and they said that we sound like radio DJs, so that's awesome. Thumbs up from that listener.
Cool. Good to hear. I welcome feedback. I got thrilled when we got some comments on Facebook earlier today. I was like, I wish more people commented, and not the usual two or three.
Considering how the DJs sound around here up in Bumfuck, Wisconsin, I'm not so sure if it's a compliment, but wherever they're from, hopefully they mean well to us.
I actually aspire at times to sound a bit DJ-esque, so, you know, this is New York. We've had some decent DJs here over the years, so. Now, before we get to the three big shows that we would normally be talking about, I wanted to give a little news update from last time. It's actually answering a bunch of questions we had in our last podcast, where we were talking about Supergirl coming to the CW. So some of the things we were wondering about, we got confirmations about. Number one, they are going to be having a full 22-episode order, which is two more than it had on CBS. But I do think it's funny, it's also one less than the odd 23 that for some reason both The Flash and Arrow get. I'm assuming that's because she's a girl. You know, no, I'm kidding. I kid. As I suspected, the show is being moved to Vancouver to save on budgetary costs. So right now they are working on trying to re-sign Calista Flockhart, who has said she wants to continue in the part, but she is an LA-based woman, and so they have to figure out a way to pay her and convince her to move to Vancouver for a good chunk of the year. Finally, they just today, I think, unveiled the fall schedule. And it does indeed look like Supergirl will be flying in the Monday at 8 o'clock time slot. So we're going to shift Jane the Virgin over to 9, and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is going to get pushed over to Fridays at 9. So apparently some shows like The Originals, which I've never seen, and a couple shows that, in all honesty, I think are often better than the shows that we talk about on this podcast, The 100 and iZombie, they're apparently going to show up more mid-season, with presumably somewhat smaller episode orders as well. This apparently is the CW's way to reduce the number of reruns that they ever aired during a primetime season, which is kind of nice that they do that. So what it means is when we get to this fall, we are going to have four nights in a row that will be anchored by a DC superhero show at 8 o'clock, which leads to the very last thing that came out today when the president of the CW network has indicated there will be a four-show crossover. Good Lord. Good luck, writers, kind of not screwing that one up. So I guess it's pretty much all good news, at least on the Supergirl / CW frontier.
Yeah, I bet. I can imagine what kind of super story they've got cooked up for this four-part crossover that will last from Monday to Thursday. As long as they can do it in 1 week, because I think if they were to fuck it up anything other than that, it would just be wrong.
Well, also, one thing they have to do here, which they can't screw up like they did with Arrow and Flash that one time, was they all have to be taking place around the same time if they're going to do it all in the same week, so that it can't be like one be a week ahead of the other and that kind of a thing. Actually, some theories I'm going to have later on in the podcast actually link to this whole multi-show crossover, but we'll get to that much later when we start talking about these shows.
Also, I think our general podcast consensus is we'd be okay if they picked up Constantine and put that on Friday nights, and then we just, I mean, none of us would ever have, like, a free night ever again, because we'd be podcasting constantly, but as long as it was a good
story. Yeah, I would love that.
Absolutely.
Your words to every network
More
head's
Constantine.
Ears. I think Constantine would be a perfect Friday at 8 show. It's got that creepy, dark feel to it much more than any of these other four. I just wish that could happen. Basically, I think we'd have to figure out, okay, is there any way we could record on the weekend? Because during the week, it's just not going to work if they're going to strip it all week. I mean, I'm already trying to figure out Monday through Thursday at this point if they're all going to be on at the same time. But, you know, we've got months to figure that whole thing out, I guess. Mm. Oh, Constantine, that would be so great. Now I'm going to fantasize instead of recording. Anyway. We should probably move on to the shows we're here to talk about, the shows that actually are on the CW. And, of course, the first one we're going to be talking about tonight is The Flash. Now, this, of course, was the penultimate episode. I'm always wondering if I'm pronouncing that word correctly, quite frankly. It was titled Invincible, which always makes me think of Iron Man, actually. I guess wasn't the old Iron Man comic called The Invincible Iron Man? Am I right about that? Dan?
You are correct.
Jason?
Yeah, they've done it a few times. They've had a few Invincible Iron Man runs, including recently, but they did that back in the day, too.
Yeah, I always just link those two words together. So, basically, this episode dealt with Barry pretty much being infused not only with purpose, but outright positivity after his encounters both within and directly with the Speed Force last week. So he's got this whole we can't lose mindset, which, while it's refreshing compared to the typical there's no way we can stop Zoom mood at Star Labs, it still seems to make almost everyone else uneasy, shaking their heads and rolling their eyes throughout the whole episode. That's really the core of this one. Now, when I'm watching this episode, you know, through the first 45, 50 odd minutes, I was preparing that Barry and his new mindset, whatever, was going to be our first topic of discussion. And then the ending happened. So, first off, let's acknowledge Jason, who we might have nicknamed Mr. Wrong and for other matters, has once again been proven right for his speculative ability. So, you know, congratulations, Jason, you bastard.
You're welcome.
Now, I want you and let's hold off right now on any additional theories or predictions. We're going to say that for the end of our Flash conversation. But since you nailed it here, I'm going to let you lead off our discussion, basically with all things Henry Allen in this episode. From those little reunions all the way to what may or may not be his final moment on the series. So, take it away, Jason.
All right, let's first start off with the fact that we had a couple of nice scenes where he and Amanda Pays are reunited from the original Flash TV show, and how great it was to see them share the screen again. And you could tell just by the interactions, the little winks, little nods that they gave each other, that they enjoyed working with each other again. Now, it wasn't just me. It was also our absent partner, Cade, that said that Henry was not going to survive this particular episode from last week. And I just happened to think that this was a good Henry Allen episode, but you could see where this was telegraphed all along that he was not going to make it out alive just from all the little interactions with Barry and with the other cast members, just that way. Sorry if I get a little verklempt with what I'm saying, but
oh, that's okay.
You know where I'm going.
You're moved by the loss of Henry Allen. It's sweet.
it's awful. I didn't shed a tear, but
Are you picking up? We're gonna say that all you're sniffling right now is you choking back your tears, not just your perpetual cold situation.
It's a goddamn Ohio Valley, is what it is.
Did you like that it was very clear that they were playing up the fact that they were reuniting Amanda Pays and John Wesley Shipp in those scenes? I mean, they really made it clear that this is a reunion, everybody. Even the way they framed the scenes and everything. I really enjoyed how they did that.
Absolutely.
Even if not many viewers would be getting that, I didn't care. I still enjoyed it.
No, you're absolutely correct that this was a big flashing neon sign. Like, here you go, guys, from the 1990 TV show. This is what you've wanted since we first announced all the casting. Here you go. This is it.
Now, Vicky, I think you've been something of a Henry Allen fan, so I want to get your take on it as well. And also, do you think we're going to get more Tina McGee on the show as the show goes on? Because I keep thinking that's a possibility, because I'm not sure what else she's doing right now in her career.
Yeah, it seems that she keeps popping up on shows, so she might be showing up more with a bit more regularity. As for Henry Allen, oh my gosh, that was a knife in the chest.
I thought it was a hand. Is that the only way speedsters can kill each other on this kill people on the show?
Apparently it's the way, it's the preferred method of killing with a speedster. I was so happy last episode he was saying he's gonna stick around, and my sister was like, well, that's the end of him. I'm like, no, because as much as I it would have been super nice to have his, dad around a little more. We'd have more my three dads situations. If that had been the case, as we always, split things between Joe and Harrison. But then it would have, been going three ways. But I don't know exactly, like I said, we don't know what John Wesley Shipp is doing, but it would have been nice to have him around more, just because give him and his, him and Barry more chance to bond, since they haven't, had that much of an opportunity, because his dad's in jail, and then he decided to leave to protect him.
Lame.
But then you got to go with the superhero trope that they can't really have their parents in their lives.
Yeah, apparently. Did anyone else enjoy the fact that it sounded like they actually acknowledged how lame it was for him to have left in the first place in the episode? I really loved that. I thought that was insane. Yeah, we didn't handle that so great. Yeah, we kind of blew it on that one. I really enjoyed that. Oh, by the way, go on. Sorry.
It's because they listened to our podcast. Of course, they heard us. Exactly. They heard us bitching about it.
Oh God, I hope not. Back to Tina. By the way, she gets one of the lines of the episode. I loved her saying, "I'm not stupid." When she clearly figured out that Barry was the Flash. I thought that was kind of priceless.
That was awesome.
And although it wasn't her, it was kind of related to her. I really enjoyed that moment when she doesn't know everything else that's going on. And then when Wells walks in and says, "Yeah, we got a few more things to catch you up on." I thought that was a nicely choreographed moment there. I thought it was a nice introduction to him into that scene. I really love that.
Yeah, that was well done.
Oh, by the way, I'm going to knock Henry Allen for one thing. So Barry, he's what, mid-20s now, I guess, whatever. And I was like, going, really? Slugger? He's calling him Slugger? What's next? Champ? Sport?
It's a dad thing, I guess.
Slugger.
Buddy.
It's a dad thing.
Just go with kiddo is timeless. Not Slugger. I just cringed with Slugger. I just thought it was a bit much. But that was just me. All right. Well, you know, again, we don't know for sure if we're never going to see him again. So, you know, it remains to be seen. You know, fingers
crossing
crossed.
Crossing my fingers.
Fingers crossed, praying for theories. So let's move to the other side of the coin as far as from positivity to negativity about Zoom. And of course, you know, and the villains in this episode, Zoom, and you got Black Siren, you know, which was kind of fun to see. I actually think I enjoyed Katie Cassidy more in her brief stint here than most of her work on Arrow, for quite frankly. I have not quite made up my mind on Caitlin in general and in this episode. I kind of keep veering back and forth about it. Some of it I like, some of it I feel that it's still a weaker character than she should be. I'll say one more thing, and then I kind of want to throw it to Dan to talk about. I will say that only because I've said this for a few podcasts, for the first time, I did not mind Teddy Sears in a scene in the Zoom outfit with the mask off. That scene with him and Barry, I think it might be the first time I liked him in the role without the quote-unquote darkness, you know, possessing him. I actually liked the way that scene was written and performed. I enjoyed that a lot.
I had the exact same reaction, too, when I was watching that. I'm just like, oh, he's not annoying for once. It's pretty sweet. So they managed to get it right this time.
I feel like he finally owned a scene where he was Zoom, where he finally owned it.
Yeah, I really liked the way they did that whole scene. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to disagree with your comments from last week in that I'm actually starting to find, you know, him as Zoom pretty terrifying.
Well, for me, this was the first time.
It
took long enough.
Well, yeah, I think it kind of I started to definitely feel with him in last week's episode. But you know, I guess you know for this, it was this week for you guys, so.
Yeah, it was pretty terrifying last week when, like, every 5 seconds he would have, like, a childhood flashback seizure in the middle of his, like, posturing. Very scary.
It wasn't scary, but I did kind of like the seizure thing for some reason. I don't know. I don't know why I did, but I didn't mind. Was I the only one? Maybe it was just me. In the opening, when Barry is kind of like zipping around, putting out all the fires everywhere, and I guess, you know, putting away all the villains as well, it was almost like a physical way of saying, fuck you, Zoom, I thought in the beginning. I really liked that. Maybe it was just me.
Well, it definitely felt like they took care of all those villains pretty handily by Barry. Like, they didn't put too much of a fight.
Well, good. Because I didn't want to waste time with that. Because they weren't, other than Black Siren, they weren't really name checking any of these people.
Yeah.
You know, and they did find a way to deal with it fairly quickly. So good, because that's not what the story is about. So I'm glad. What did you guys think of Caitlin with that Zoom ghost thing that kept popping up? Was that just all in her head, her own trauma, or do you think there was anything more to it than that?
I think a lot of it was trauma because she, you know, just the whole her whole situation, you know, with Zoom. It and honestly, that can be super traumatizing. So I don't blame her for having, you know, some kind of, you know, like PTSD or whatever. Mm. I was almost gonna say it's a shame that they're going back into this. Thing basically her storyline revolves basically around a guy more or less, but I think that they're doing it fairly well because it's not just a straightforward relationship type thing. This is a seriously scary guy and she's been through some stuff.
Yeah. Well, now she's a victim. So I'm iffy on that one as well, quite frankly.
I think it's more or less that Caitlin is being haunted by the prospect of Zoom as opposed to just Zoom itself being there. So she's seen shadows where there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Okay. So switching from Zoom back to Black Sirens, we haven't, other than me bringing it up, we haven't really spoken about her. Oh, by the way, when Caitlin says they loved her, referring to Laurel Lance, I was going, really? They loved her? How much did you even interact with her? You loved her?
I did find that kind of a bit of an odd comment.
I thought it was a little weird.
A little strong.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy her performance. I thought her outfit was better than Black Canary. I liked the fact that they did the little animated special effect for the Sonic Cry, which looked far better than it ever did on Arrow. I was actually thinking I kind of wish she could be a recurring villain on this show as opposed to ever appearing in some dopey flashback on Arrow or something. At least that was my take on her.
Yeah, I enjoyed her kicking Barry's ass too. That was kind of sweet. I mean, she was using her sonic powers and ninja powers in concert, much better than we usually would see on Arrow. So it was kind of sweet.
Right. Oh, this got brought up on another Facebook page. I ended up getting into an unintentional argument, so let me just run it by you guys really briefly. So someone was commenting on this scene when Barry first encounters her, and he made a comment to the effect that, oh, here we go. Why does Barry keep freaking out when he sees someone dead who's alive from Earth 2? And once again, it leads to him getting his ass kicked. And I was saying, I don't really think he freaked out. He just said, Laurel Lance. And then, within 30 seconds, he's fine. But the other person was contending that, no, it still impacted how he fought with her. And that's how she was able to get the upper hand. Blah, 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 blah. I personally don't see it that way. I think it would be weird for him not to have any reaction. But I don't really think it impacted what happens here. But maybe I'm seeing this differently. What did you guys think? Did you think that, once again, Barry kind of left himself open to having his ass kicked by the way he reacted, or not so much?
Yeah, I think there was a momentary reaction that contributed to it, but he recovered from it quickly enough.
Well,
yeah. Once again, we're dealing with a more confident Barry, as from the last episode where he came out from the Speed Force, where he was like, everything's great. We're going to win no matter what. And he momentarily had his brain shook or something by seeing a person he thought was dead, but he recovered a lot quicker than he had in the past.
Well, I wouldn't say he recovered super fast because Wally had to save his ass there. So, I mean, it was a while before he got back to doing stuff. But I think I agree with the person you're arguing with a bit, Scott. I definitely took it as he was shooken by what he saw, and it just kind of made him sluggish. And then she instantly got the upper hand, and he just couldn't, he was disoriented and couldn't get going.
I guess I went back, I watched the scene, I fucking transcribed the goddamn thing after it, because that's the way, if I'm going to win an argument, I make with the facts and everything. And I just said, he just said, Laurel Lance, kind of, and then they go to commercial. And when they come back, you hear Cisco on his comm saying, him telling comment, it's Laurel Lance. And then she says, she makes a comment about that name. And then he goes right into smirky mode. It's like, so what am I supposed to call you? So he doesn't seem to be the surprise only lasted the commercial break, if anything.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't think, I don't equate this. Let's go back in time to season one, that ridiculous scene when he's fighting, who is it? Is it Multi-Man or Multiple Man, whatever that stupid character? The one who could make himself look like other people.
Multiplex.
Multiplex, thank you. Multi-Man. Actually, there is a character named Multi-Man. Anyway, the stupidity of him reacting to, oh, it's Iris, oh, it's Caitlin. It's like, but you know who it is. That shouldn't surprise you at all, because it's the villain you're fighting. Where at least in this case, I was also pointing out, he was just at this woman's funeral a couple weeks ago. So it would be weird for it not to be jarring to see her in the flesh again. And, I'm actually impressed it didn't last more than a few seconds. But maybe it did impact the way he fought her. I just don't think he was prepared for it. I love the fact that someone later on, I think it's Caitlin, makes a comment why did he keep fighting villains who have sound powers and stuff? I thought that was kind of funny. So since you brought up Wally West, I think that's the next person we should go to.
Just one sec.
Okay.
No, I just wanted to give my two cents. I just want to say that I completely agree that I loved Katie Cassidy as Black Siren. I thought she did an awesome job. And, like, I was thinking about this. I really liked how they, like you said, how they did the sound waves. It would have been awesome if they could have done the character of Black Canary in the show with this, like, as a metahuman and have those, you know, sound powers, like, as actual powers, but, you know, obviously they can't do that now because she's, you know, in the Arrowverse and they went through the Lance sisters like they did. So
I'm sure there'll be a third one or fourth one or whatever. I also like the fact that it seemed to be her own actual ability and not some stupid little device or something, you know, more like the actual Black Canary, quite frankly.
Yeah, like I just had to contribute that. As a Black Canary,
it's okay. It makes it that much funnier with the thing I was just about to bring up, because I think every Laurel Lance hater cheered when Wally bursts onto the scene and runs her over. I mean, even I did. I went, "Yeah,
that was awesome."
That's one of the best parts of the show.
Hip checked her with a car.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Excellent. I really, really liked Wally West in this episode, and, you know, I was iffy on him, as I think a lot of people were in the early going, especially with all the stupid Fast and Furious car crap, but I think they've taken their time to build his character, so here, I thought his motivations were surprisingly reasonable. So I really kind of enjoyed where they're going with this, and yeah, let them take their time before making him a speedster, if in fact they do, because there's always that chance maybe they don't, but why have him and Jesse in that accident if they're not eventually going to get speed powers? Otherwise, I don't understand why they had that scene there at all. So I'm kind of enjoying Wally a lot more, and I'm kind of curious where they're going to go with him. Jason, I think you're another old school Wally West fan. So, how are you feeling about him at this point in the show?
Well, as you said, his motivations were really clear cut and straightforward as to what he was doing in this episode. There was none of this murky, why is he doing this? What is he doing? I don't understand. Where is he going as a character? This is the first episode where I've really enjoyed the Wally West character. And I'm actually looking forward to him now acquiring speed powers. And you could tell that he wants to help the Flash. That's what he wants. He's already getting the hero worship in his system.
Now, I do have what may or may not be a dumb question. I'm not sure. Because there might have been a little moment I missed because I wasn't doing my usual take a note every 5 seconds kind of thing like I used to with this show. Okay. By the time this episode is over, at the very least, surely Wally knows that Barry is the Flash now, right? I mean...
Absolutely.
I mean... Now,
they sure to have an action shot, so...
Okay. Now,
it has to.
Did they tell him before the final scene when basically everyone they were having the big dinner with knows that Barry is the Flash except him? Did they maybe tell him off screen? Did he ever figure it out? How is he not recognizing Barry's voice? Even though it just sounds like Barry, you know, talking through a microphone. It doesn't really sound much different than him, and he still looks like him. I kept thinking, Tina McGee said, I'm not stupid, but is Wally?
No, he figures it out at the dinner scene when Barry takes off after Zoom, when Zoom snatches Henry.
Well, I would think he'd have to.
Yeah, at that point he's got to.
He didn't know before then.
But there's a moment when Wally is talking about all these things that have happened, and I kept wanting Wally to have that moment, like, wait a minute. Why else would this all be happening? Anyway, I just wanted to make sure that I was clear that, okay, Wally knows now, so there's not the stupid, there's still someone who doesn't know crap going on the show. Okay. Thank God. Oh, by the way, since, even though it's not Wally, I did want to mention a little bit about Joe here, who I enjoy him in every episode just about. My favorite Joe West moment happened in this episode, and it wasn't a word he spoke. Did anyone catch there's a moment when Wells is once again going through one of his explanations, and there's a brief shot of Joe West rolling his eyes to another explanation. And I went, oh, I love that they did that. I really enjoyed that. It was so
real.
Oh,
yeah, I can't get out of that.
Well, now, since we've spoken about all these, a lot of the side characters, other than, well, we've left out a couple, we'll get to them. I think we should really talk a little bit about Barry himself here. And we can also then, you know, we can also cover Sisko, because obviously one of the running things throughout this episode are these glimmers of a vision, which eventually then becomes Sisko's vision of what apparently is Earth 2 being destroyed. Which was quite an impressive special effect, quite frankly. I mean, I know it's computer, but still, I thought it was kind of nicely done. So, as I said at the top, you know, it's on one hand, it was kind of nice seeing Barry not be all, you know, moody, which kind of bothers me because that's not the Flash that we know on this show. But he's more confident. But I was able to understand everyone's perspective, like. Yeah, it's almost like he's had a little bit too much of the Kool-Aid, the Speed Force Kool-Aid or something here. Because he kept thinking, it's okay, we've got the Speed Force on our side. Like, so? You know, Speed Force hasn't helped you out yet. But I kind of liked it. It was kind of funny to see how everyone kept having to have a little talk with him and how it wasn't working. And then, you know, I probably took till the very end and what happens with his dad to really kind of break him out of it. Vicky, were you liking the way that Barry's arc was going throughout this episode, or did you think it might have been a little bit much? No, you liked it?
I actually kind of enjoyed seeing this confident Barry again. Though, like, I totally understand their concern because they're like, you know, he could be reckless with this confidence or whatever and get himself killed, and I appreciated that they took the time to, you know, like, talk to him one-on-one, and you know, he explained himself well why he had this confidence.
Right.
You know, yeah, it sorry, I forgot.
That's
I lost
okay.
my
Well, the interesting thing, I'll fill in while you're coming up with your thought here. Oh, you got it?
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah, I like that he says that it's not that he wasn't confident. You know, it's not that he was, you know, overconfident in himself. He just wasn't, he just was not afraid. You know, so I thought that was good, so.
Which character was it who then makes a comment that it's actually good to have a little bit of fear? I can't remember who it. What was it? I don't know. I don't think it was Iris. Who does anyone remember who said that?
I don't. I don't remember.
I don't.
Oh, we all suck.
Winston Churchill, I think.
Winston Churchill. FDR. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of a refreshingly different arc for him. The show always has that little danger of getting into repetitions in some episodes, but it didn't really bother me that much in this episode. I did like it. Can I also give a shout out for Sisko coming up with one of my favorite another one of my favorite lines in the episode where he says, "It's like a Hitchcock movie in my head."
You know what? That was what I thought of when they saw the birds. Yeah, it's like it's birds.
I think I was thinking of some old Stephen King story where like birds kept crashing up against the window. Or actually, that happens in Lost. Now that I come to think of it, if I'm not mistaken,
with the kid Walt. Yeah,
I know this. I know the Stephen King story you're talking about.
Is it the one with the dark half? The sparrows.
Yeah, the dark half.
Yeah, no, I remember the story. It's the one that they did the movie with Timothy Hutton, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
it's a Stephen King story about a writer. Go figure. Like every other book he ever wrote. All right, so you know, I think at this point it might be cool to move away from the episode and actually looking forward to the finale. So I thought we might want to... Oh, yes, Vicky?
Sorry. Yeah, okay. we didn't really bring this up, but Cisco and Caitlin posing as Reverb and Killer Frost. I love that.
Say too. Yeah, that was pretty funny. And it was pretty smart, too, even if it didn't work.
Plus, he has... Oh, go on. I'm sorry.
Just he has, like, you know, and he also, like, used some kind of, you know, energy power type thing or whatever. So there's that.
Oh, yeah. We got a little more development of power with Cisco there.
I liked it because it was amusing, but I thought it was being a good plan. I didn't think there was any way Black Siren wouldn't see right through it, which she clearly does within about 92 seconds or so. Although I thought it was interesting, it's like, wait, does she know about them both being dead or not? Would Zoom have filled her in that he killed Killer Frost himself, you know, in between things? I wasn't sure, but it didn't really matter.
Oh, I'm sure if he kills someone, he makes sure the other metahumans know about it to keep them in line.
Right, got it. Okay, so any other minute details we want to nail down in the episode before we move on, or have we finished the episode at this point? I'm saying we finished the episode because we don't need to talk about every fucking second of it. Dan, I know you've been bursting at the seams because you've got some theories of your own, and I'm more eager to hear your theories than either Jason or the absent Cades, because you always come up with something that's weirdly imaginative and has the feeling of truth to it. So I wanted to hear what your latest thoughts were on where the show is going. So take it away.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had, you know, obviously I watched it after you guys, so I knew something was going to happen at the end, so I wasn't quite as surprised as you guys, but I still was just like, oh, no shit, this is, you know, going down seriously. But pretty much as soon as it ended, I'm just, like, started thinking, it's like, okay, you know, they didn't kill Henry here, so I'm pretty sure, I'm pretty confident that what happened is that Jay killed Earth 2 Henry Allen there, and that Earth 1 Harry Allen is, like the man in the iron mask and has been like captured for, you know, instead of hiking at Granite Peak National Park or wherever he's, you know, supposedly been at some point that I'm pretty sure. I mean, that's, I've gave it a lot of thought, but what really got me thinking on this train was like the last thing that Henry says before he gets killed, and just says, your mother and I love you. And it just made me really like think that just like the way he's speaking there, it just kind of seems like she's still alive and maybe like, you know, Zoom is holding her, or maybe, like, Zoom's holding Barry, or maybe Zoom's, like, you know, just, like, holding her back on Earth, too, and is, like, threatening to, like, kill Barry, or maybe he's, like, you know, holding Barry, just the same kind of shit he was doing with Harrison before, you know, using him to get that. So I think, and just the fact that, like, Jay, like, so horribly telegraphed he's gonna do this in this very episode, I'm thinking, so, that's what I'm thinking. And there's just other stuff, too, like, so I'm just guessing that he would have had to have, like, been the one to sabotage the, you know, the headphones that weren't working for Jesse. I mean, you could just, if he took out the microelectronics, just be, like, an inner-ear thing, but he had done that, so then the Earth 2, like, pulse wave wouldn't have knocked him out. And I would think that, just since they established in this episode that, like, people from the other universe are, like, you know, left-handed instead of right-handed, if, like, I actually had, like, any time where I wasn't just, like, doing a bunch of shit outside, I would have, like, looked it up, but I would guess that maybe like they have shown that this Henry. Plus, I mean, he's been acting a little weird since he came back anyway. I just thought that maybe like the actor had like a hernia or something because he's just walking around looking all freaking like pain the whole time. But plus, you know, plus Slugger is kind of the thing that they would call somebody on Earth too, Sally.
That's a good one. I like that. Jason, you've been kind of the you've been one of the kings of speculative prediction theories. So where are you going with all this?
I like where Dan is thinking. The man in the iron mask could be a Henry Allen. Is it the Earth One Henry Allen? I don't know. I guess we'll find out next week. But it's something I'm looking forward to. I've said it before in the past couple weeks that I want Henry Allen to put the Jay Garrick helmet on and be that Flash, because I think that would be perfect. But is it going to happen? Probably not. It's a pipe dream on my part.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Well, I'm still sticking with John Wesley Shipp is going to be that man behind the mask. I would love if it turned out he was somehow Jay Garrick, because especially when they dropped that thing about the mother's maiden name thing, I'm not sure if that's what they're going to do. The way I think they're going to do it is this. I think it's entirely possible the show is going to end with that mask being ripped off and him simply saying he's the Flash. And we don't get the explanation until next season, which means that it's open season. It could be maybe he's the Jay Garrick Flash, maybe he's the 1990 TV version of the Flash, which would then fill in why they bothered showing us that in the when Barry was running through the breach earlier this season, and why you keep using everybody from that show.
or they could be cowardly bitches and just not, you know, take off the mask and not show you, like the Walking Dead fuckheads. So they could do that.
I would be so pissed. I'd be so pissed if that happens.
The writers have already said that they're revealing it and it's going to blow everybody's mind, which I really wish they hadn't set themselves up that way, because I'm going to be like, it wasn't really that mind-blowing. But I'm pretty sure they're not going the Walking Dead route here.
If we were assuming that was Earth 1 Henry Allen over the last couple weeks, so if my theory is correct, then me and Scott are still right, and that, you know, he didn't really get killed because it was somebody else the whole time.
Oh, so. That's right.
Yeah. So, fuck you, Kate, Jason.
I now love Dan's theory that much more.
Vicky, what do you think about all this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm really bad at, like, theorizing and making predictions.
I'll just flip a coin, damn it.
She'd already said that she's not good at this.
Yeah, we're leaving out so we wouldn't have weird, awkward silences on the podcast.
Yeah, I'll leave that bit to you.
Black Canary could make this decision, Vicky. You got this. Let's go put on your mask quick.
That's okay. Let's move ahead.
I'm also gonna say that I think I'm gonna say that Zoom dies in the episode. So that's another prediction for the finale, and I'm totally okay with that. And I'm wondering, this is just purely speculation, it's not really a prediction, it's more a theorizing, whatever. You know, between, you know, getting what I think is a likely John Wesley Shipp reveal at the end, and plus the fact that we know that Supergirl is coming to the network and all that, and with the crossover that happened earlier this season, whatever, I'm kind of sort of thinking, and then Cisco's vision of what's going on with Earth 2, looking like it's being destroyed or something's happening with that. I'm kind of thinking something may happen that's going to involve the overall multiverse. It may be like what happened in the comics a million years ago, you know, some form of a consolidation, you know, of the Earths somehow, or something that will cause there to be an easier path, link, or bridge between all these other worlds, unless they all end up merging into one, which is a possibility here. That will certainly make it a lot easier as far as crossovers are concerned. But, I mean, obviously a lot of that probably won't be revealed until season 3, but I feel like there's going to be some cliffhanger-y kind of thing that's going to involve the multiverse here. And Cisco's vision, I think, is telegraphing that, but that's deliberate. So that's my last word on the any theories or predictions here.
I'm thinking maybe we're gonna see Earth 2, like, blow up, but then, like, it'll actually have been hiding under a dumpster on Earth 1 the whole time, so it'll be okay.
God. All right. So I'm calling it for The Flash, so now we can move on to the next show, which would be Arrow. Now, the latest episode of Arrow, which for some reason in my notes I gave the wrong title. Just noticed I was about to say Invincible again. Like, no, it's Lost in the Flood. It's Lost in the Flood. I remember that. It's the whole biblical thing. Titled Lost in the Flood. I really enjoy this episode a lot. Arrow, which I've been kind of down on more often than not, it feels, this season, I think has really been picking it up the last couple episodes. So I wouldn't mind focusing on what one of my favorite parts of the episode was. The stuff involving, let's call it Team Felicity. You know, the stuff with Felicity, her mom, her dad, and then they threw Curtis in there as well. And I love Curtis Holt on this show. I just get such a kick out of him. So you got all your comic relief all there, as well as you got a little bit of drama, a little bit of emotion there going on too. I vastly enjoyed all of that. So, Vicky, you know, I know you're a big Felicity fan as well. Now, did you enjoy the stuff, the non superhero stuff here, but with this little foursome? It is four. Right?
I did. Okay. I thought it was done really well because you got the family stuff going on with, you know, Donna, Noah, and Felicity, but it didn't slow the story down because it was framed around the whole trying to stop Rubicon thing with her, you know, going against her ex boyfriend and having Curtis helped them and his drinking to deal with Donna and Noah's bickering.
That was great.
I really enjoyed seeing Curtis in this episode. Made me want to see him so much more on the show. It's like, oh, they really need you. They can't just have Felicity be the only person who's remotely funny on this show. You really need Curtis in this show as well, I think.
Yeah.
One of the things I kind of enjoy them doing here was, and they expressly say it in the episode, but I like the fact that you could see the different parts of Felicity and how she came to be when you're watching both her mother and her father. I really enjoy the different aspects of the personalities coming out in these two different characters. So I enjoyed that a lot.
I really liked how Felicity finds out that Donna, like, you know, lied to her, like, her whole life, whatever, but, like, instead of them dragging it out for, like, six episodes like they would if it was fucking Oliver, they just, like, resolved it instantly, maturely, and moved on. So that was very, very refreshing for this show to do.
That is how a mature person deals with things like that.
Yeah, I was like, is this Felicity? Because that's not what she does.
I found it hilarious, though, with Curtis making the comparison with Noah and Donna, and then her and Oliver.
Oh yeah, that was good. I forgot all about that. It's like, oh, history repeating itself. Interesting.
So maybe, hopefully, she will learn from the lesson of her parents.
Yeah, and hopefully Noah will do the right thing and listen to Donna and just maybe go, you know, hike at Granite Peak National Park for a while.
Find Henry Allen's bones. One of the things I also enjoyed that involves this series of scenes, because they also bring in, surprisingly, they bring in one of Felicity's exes. I think he was in the episodes when we saw Felicity with the black hair in college. This is like her college boyfriend. The only reason I'm bringing this up, because I don't really care about talking that much about him otherwise, is we got a couple Star Trek VI references, which I thought was so awesome. I kept thinking, Sisko would be beaming right now if he was here. I mean, the way to work in both Shakespeare and Star Trek VI, and that's what this is from. I was thinking, Dan is watching this. He's got to be enjoying the fact that they're referencing Star Trek VI.
Yeah, I'm just feeling. You said Sisko, the captain of Deep Space Nine, and you said beaming. So I'm just like enjoying how you're working in extra Star Trek references while we talk about it. So
it's totally unintentional, but it still works.
No, that was cool. I didn't see the episode like where this boy ex boyfriend character was in before. And I think I'm probably since you had me skip it. This is a character from some point in the past. I'm guessing it didn't matter, but.
It was the episode called, I think it was like The Secret Life of Felicity Smoke, where we actually saw her in her college age days. So Felicity's like all goth and it's got like that black hair thing going and everything. If you don't, I thought you would have seen, I'm surprised I didn't have you watch that one. That's weird. Oh well. You can always go back and track it down if you want to. If you want to see Felicity with dark hair, that's the reason to watch it. Otherwise, you didn't really miss much.
No, I'm in love with Black Siren now, so I've moved on.
Excellent. So, switching teams, let's look at, I guess we can call them Team Arrow. Like, all the stuff dealing with Ollie and Diggle going to... Vicky, what's the name of the that whole... It's the underground suburb that they've created here.
Tavit Noah, I believe.
Right, and
is what it's called.
And I think Cade pointed out, you know, pre-podcast when he was still able to communicate with us, that that's actually Hebrew for, is it Noah's Ark, essentially?
Yeah.
Let's go with yes. So what was interesting about watching these scenes is this is one of the very few times we get to see Green Arrow, and probably the very first time we've ever seen, I even hate calling him Spartan, running around in broad daylight. Even if it's fake daylight, it's still bright out. It's not at night. Which was a little jarring. And again, I'll give Cade credit one last time. See, I remember him pointing it out. Man, if I thought Spartan's mask looked bad before, seeing it in the bright light of day is like, that's a really bad helmet mask thing. It looks really stupid. But putting silly details aside, I really enjoyed the whole weird, you know, Wayward Pines cult-like suburb situation that was going on here. Dan, I thought, you know, since this is a little bit stranger than what we normally get on Arrow, I thought you might have gotten a kind of a kick out of some of this. So what did you think about all this?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, just the way they had it set up. And I didn't really buy the fact that, I mean, all Oliver had to do was talk to, like, you know, one guy, and just, like, he instantly changed, like, wasn't sure about anything. I thought that was kind of, you know, kind of weak and not really what he'd be into. But I definitely thought it was kind of, you know, it's definitely interesting how they had it set up. I'm not really sure why, like, you know, they have pills to, like, make people just, like, mindless zombies like Alex, and they have pills to, like, turn Thea into a killing machine. So I'm not really sure how many different kind of pills they have down there. Must be, you know, that's how it is nowadays, but... But it was cool.
But I like the twist that the fact that a lot of these people apparently aren't under any pill control. I thought that was kind of. I'm apprehensive about using the term brilliant or genius when it comes to the writing of this show, but I thought that was as close as they get, because I was like, oh, that's a twist I didn't see coming. And that's why I was able to more believe that he could have talked him out of it, you know, or whatever, or at least shown him the light, sort of. It's a bit of a stretch, but you know what? Everything on all these shows is a bit of a stretch when it comes right down.
Yeah, what those people are saying makes sense. It's just like, you know, the evolution of, like, doubt for Oliver was just a little bit way too fast. And Diggle's just like, fuck, man, let's get going.
I was kind of excited to find out that they have dogs down there. I was like, look, there's dogs. I can't believe they have dogs.
Well, it's cool when they're fighting in the light too, because you can really see how horrible Diggle's mask is. Like, you can see his eyes and just like, oh, he really can't see shit with that thing on, can he?
I know, that's what I was saying before. It's such a bad mask. I mean, I have a actually that's going to be part of a theory I'm going to have later on. But oh god, it's so bad. Just give him a new fucking helmet or mask or something, or give him a fucking stocking mask or something.
Yeah, I know you're not a fan of the mask or the fight sometimes, but I gotta tell you, I really like the run fight they did in,
Noah's Ark. This I liked.
It was fun.
Because it worked. It was different. And maybe it's because we could see it clearly, so that maybe they had and they were jumping through bushes and on lawns, so that made it kind of just wacky, as opposed to the usual, hey, they're fighting in a dark abandoned warehouse or on an abandoned street.
That chase scene.
Yeah, I'm sure they're just running in front of the same house over and over and over again, but it looked cool, and I mean, there was bystanders and just, you know, ghosts and shit. And, like, crazy, like, moving around backwards, like, shot moves, so it was...
I loved when Oliver, like, he, like, jumped up and kind of, like, just, like, like he like simultaneously didn't like a 180 to shoot the arrow at the guys. Like I had to like go back. I'm like, did I just see that?
Again, I said it. I think I might have said it in the last podcast. If he's Green Arrow, the more he uses bow and arrow, the more I like him as a hero, because that's what he does. He doesn't spend that much time in hand to hand combat. I don't mind him doing it from time to time because they've established he's a warrior, but I like him using the bow and arrow. I also like the fact that he used at least one other arrow that wasn't just simply, you know, an arrow with a point on it. I mean, he did mm-hmm. use another kind of arrow during this, because I'm not saying he should go full tilt crazy with gadget arrows, but he should have a few, especially with Felicity, you know, being like and now Curtis as well. You've got like these tech geniuses. He should have arrows that do some crazy shit at this point, is the way I look at it.
Yeah. Like, I just wanted to comment again, just one more thing on that, like, that chase scene. I know you guys have commented that you find the the fight scenes like tiresome. I think that this was a good way to kind of like shake it up a little bit, because they were kind of traveling as they fought, and I always like when they incorporate the parkour moves into this kind of thing.
Basically, if you do a fight scene in a new and different way, then I'll be interested. If you do the same thing over and over, then I'm not interested. So, like, if someone's watched the show Daredevil, when they do something that's new and wild and different, like him fighting throughout it, you know, one take throughout a stairwell or throughout a corridor or whatever, that's amazing. But when you're just fighting the same guys over and over on the rooftop, that's boring. And that's the same applies to Arrow.
Yeah, it's just Laurel and Thea doing, like, endless roundhouse kicks and leg sweeps.
I hated that.
Yeah, it's a perfectly valid criticism. Because, I mean, you can only, you know, show off so many fancy tricks where, you know, before it gets, you know, okay, this again.
Right.
But this was a different way to change it up a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's just a challenge for the show to come up with. But there's no reason they can't do it. It's not like it takes up, you know, 17 minutes of an episode. Come up with a different type of fight. It seems that way sometimes. Is that one? Oh, God. But, you know, this should be something that's fun, and I'm not going to say easy, but something they should be able to do. I'm not asking them to write amazing dialogue. I'm asking them to come up with different ways to choreograph fight scenes that are just different. And there's so many ways you can do that. We've all seen so many action movies and TV shows. Here they did something different. Keep doing things that are different. Doing things and that will make me enjoy it that much more. Absolutely.
Yeah, the show is called Arrow. It's now called like Diplomacy or Hand Wringing. So they can just hire two more like stunt coordinators. They're saving money. They're not paying Laurel anymore. So fuck it, hire another stunt guy.
Hey, speaking of the bow and arrow, so where did Thea get the extra bow and arrow? Did Merlin bring an extra one?
I'm assuming Merlin yeah. gave it to her because he had brainwashed her into being on his side. Right.
Which brings me to something I really feel the need to comment on in this episode, because I'm thinking it's a joke, especially because the actor is known for having probably the craziest sense of humor of anyone on the show, and I'm focusing on Barrowman here, the actor who plays Merlin. Okay, so we know several episodes ago, Ollie cut off his hand. And he's gotten his hand now replaced with this mechanical hand thing, right? Why is he insisting on walking around holding his arm like that? It's this weird, somewhat fey, somewhat Napoleonic, weird way. I don't understand. Like, but he didn't break your arm, and you don't have it in a sling either. Why are you walking around like that? You've gotten your hand replaced. And I kept thinking, I think the actor is just having a little fun here, and no one's giving him shit about it because they're not having him fight anybody right now. But it seemed really bizarre to me. Did anyone catch that? It seemed really strange.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And it's funny too, because like after how this episode ended, I'm just like Merlin is like the Alex Krycek of fucking Arrow, because he changes sides like at the drop of a hat every 5 seconds. And I guess like there's the arm thing too, but yeah,
his hair looked good. His hair looked different. Anyone notice?
Yeah, really nice hair.
Yeah,
it looked poofy.
Yeah, just like the real Merlin, he seems to be getting younger with age. So.
Oh boy! So
he really is Jack Harkness. No.
Oh Lord, I haven't even seen the show, but I know exactly what you're talking about. So speaking of him switching sides, let's get into the villains on this episode, because I thought it was a very unique episode because you had two different villain storylines going on, which eventually obviously smash into one another, and in a somewhat surprising way. I think unlike the previous show we talked about, I'm not so sure something was telegraphed as obviously on this one. The stuff with Anarchy, who I have to say has become more and more an interesting character on the show, who I never thought would be remotely interesting, quite frankly. I really kind of got a kick out of this character, but did anyone really think he was actually going to kill Dark's wife? Because that, I will say, that actually surprised me.
I'm going to say I wasn't too surprised, because he is just so insane that he will do anything. And like you said, I just find him so fascinating. It's like he's that just brand of crazy that you don't know what he's going to do next, but like you can totally, you kind of at the same time totally expect that he would do something like that. So maybe that was just me.
Dad? I was too distracted by the fact that like I couldn't tell if like Dark's child was a boy or girl, just because like I don't know what the hell was going on there. But fortunately, somebody referred to her as a daughter. But I'm just like, fuck, you know. Yes, yeah, I guess in Star City in 2016, you know, parents just like let their children like decide what gender they like supposedly are, so they can be even more entitled than they already fucking are. So I couldn't fucking tell like what gender that child was supposed to be until the end. So I couldn't focus on anything else. Explosions going on.
Yep. All right. That was our North Carolina segment of the podcast today.
Yeah.
I actually also enjoyed the fact he kept calling Thea mommy.
Oh my gosh, that creeps me out so much.
I really enjoyed that. So switching to our main villain, we've said time and time again how much we're enjoying Neil McDonough on the show, and I thought this episode was no different. It's almost like just play the same record for this actor and this character. I mean, he's just so much fun to watch. That whole shtick about it being Christmas time was just making me smile. It's like, oh, this is the one character I feel like they're having fun writing for. I really am getting a kick out of it. Although I kept wondering, how long is it taking them to tell him what happened to his wife? It seems like he's not being kept apprised of what's going on, you know, yeah. 100 feet below, wherever the hell, however far down it is. But I did really enjoy him a lot. Do you guys have any other insights into him or anything else for that matter?
Nope. I thought you were going to say something. I saw your box light up, so. I was just wondering, just like, why is this like hack Rubicon base like so much farther from, like, you know, why isn't it all like in the same area? I was just kind of distracted by that.
Yeah, I didn't even really think about that, though. That's, you know, added to the list of if you really think about it. You know. Oh, by the way, there's something, one of our listeners and friends pointed out on Facebook, also being surprised we didn't mention it last week. Yeah, it's kind of funny. We didn't mention the fact that, hey, so they ended up wiping out some other town and killed apparently tens of thousands of people.
Oh.
It's a little weird we didn't mention that, now that I think about it, because that's probably the most apocalyptic thing we've seen on these shows.
Yeah, that's on you guys.
Oh, that's right. You weren't even there. See, you know what? I actually blame Vicky, because if she had been there, she would have brought it up. So it's your fault, Vicky. Clearly, I'm, again, going with the whole fuck the flashbacks because I found them just stupid, as I always do. And the fact that if the final flashback in any way ties into the actual show, it's actually going to still annoy me because I hate the flashbacks so much. Oh, look, they're both possessed by the elf. Shut up. Stupid.
It's a great flashback. It's like, I have this idol. We must go back to my country, comrade, and we must fight evil's communist dictator. It's pretty fucking bad.
So, can they...
I've never cared about any of those characters in this whole, season, other than Ali. Like, I don't give a... And obviously he will survive, but I haven't gave a shit about anybody else we've seen on the island the entire season.
Yeah. All I cared about was... We got Constantine in one episode. That's it. That's it. Everything else, I don't care. Don't care. Wasting my time yet again. Enough of the flashbacks. It worked the first two seasons. I think it has not been really worthwhile the last two seasons. And this season, oh boy. The only thing good about it is like, oh look, they cut. At least he's not wearing a bad wig. You know, that's about it.
It's just a bunch of fucking filler is what it is.
It's totally needless. I mean, you know, I don't want 12 more minutes of Roundhouse Kicks, but you know, God, give us something else. Give us other backstories. Then I don't know.
They could do a really good B story on some of the other secondary characters and all the time that they spent on the flashbacks in the past couple of years.
Yeah, but you know, maybe that'll happen in the next season. Who knows? Because I'm kind of wondering. Where else can they go with these fucking flashbacks already? Enough. Boring.
Yeah, they still have to explain how he learned Russian and how he became a gang leader in Russia. Whatever.
God damn it. God damn it. All right, so that for that one, I'm going to blame Jason. just to be unreasonable. Not the writers, I'm going to blame Jason. Going into the final episode... Is there anything that any theories or anything predictions we foresee is going to happen here? Dan, anything you can predict or would like to predict here?
Oh, I'm not really sure what to expect. I think it'd be kind of cool if they like maybe brought the Earth 2 good guy Damien Dark here to like have him like help save the day. But I don't think they've developed that stuff yet.
That would be awesome. No, there he's a Lamont Light or something like that. Lamont.
But yeah, I'm not sure what they're going to do, but I'm sure it'll be pretty cool. I think they definitely struggled having to kind of delay like in the middle of the season to get to this point. But I think they're barreling along. I haven't even drank, and I can't say the word barreling. Forward towards the end of the season with nice solid momentum and not a whole bunch of stupid shit. So I think we should have a nice finale in that as well as the Flash. So good. Kudos to them.
Jason, do you want to chime in with something before I unload here?
I haven't had a chance to watch much of the Arrow the past, I don't know, last month or so. So I'm really behind. I don't know what's going on.
All right. So you don't get to talk now. Okay. So, it's my favorite kind of podcast. So, I'm pretty sure we are going to see something in that final flashback that's going to factor into the story, just because it'll piss me off. So naturally, they'll fucking do that. I'm going to go all in with the villains in these finales. So, and by that I mean death. So, Damien Dark dies because this whole fucking season has been building up to I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him. So. If you don't kill him, you're kind of a failure.
Yeah.
Although I would admit, it would actually be more interesting if he's somehow reduced to some weak shell of a man, which would be kind of like a virtual death form. But
yeah.
It still feels like, dude, even Felicity is saying you gotta kill him. You know, and Diggle certainly wants you to kill him. So actually it'd be funny if everyone wants him to kill him and Ollie's the one who makes the decision not to. No, Mr. Former Killer himself. Oh God, I could see him doing that now. Oh Lord.
Isn't what's his name from season two like still locked up like in a vault somewhere? Couldn't they?
Deathstroke is still somewhere. Escaped.
They could just throw him there. That'd be cool.
God, I hope they don't do that. Pirates.
Yeah, he's still on, was it Lan Yu or whatever?
I was never clear if he was still there, if he had escaped or not. I couldn't remember if he had escaped.
I don't think he's escaped, so I guess at some point we'll see him again. But I don't know what they'll do with Dark. I suppose they'll... Yeah. He's such a fun actor, I hate to admit it, but he was definitely the kind of guy they probably need to kill, because, especially now, he's not going to be happy.
It would just be weird if, like, in the very first episode of the season, like, I'm going to kill him, and that's been... We've seen that several times throughout the series, and now we get to the final episode, and they don't kill him. So I was like, well, you kind of said you're going to kill him. You should be killing him. So beyond that, I'm thinking by the end of the episode, we're going to see Ollie and Felicity kind of on the road back to being together again, if they're not fully back together. I know, sorry, but I think they're building back to that.
Ooh.
And
yeah, they are.
Yeah.
It seems like they are.
I feel like they're going to. I definitely think they're also going to be laying the groundwork for Ollie running for mayor and revealing his identity. Whether that'll be in this episode or next season, I don't know. And I'm just going to throw this out there. Just this more wishful thinking about Spartan getting a new helmet. So I keep thinking maybe there'll be a moment with Curtis playing with that helmet and looking at that T shape and maybe having an idea for himself, because the whole Mr. Terrific having that like little T-shaped kind of thing on his face. So I wonder if they may have a play with that. They probably won't, because it's probably way too much for them to do in 1 hour. But that's more wishful thinking than literal prediction here. But you never know.
I think if they do that, they would do that like next season.
Still want them to get rid of it. So
I know.
Anyway. All right. I feel we've covered Arrow and then some. So... I know it's going to be time to move on to the third show, but are we saying goodbye to one of our own here? Are you going to be departing now, Dan, or are you sticking around?
Yeah, I think I'm going to head out. I think I'm going to maybe write some Season 3 Arrow flashback fan fiction. I think that kind of Cade's idea was kind of sweet. So, yeah, I'm going to run around Hong Kong or Singapore, and there's some kid going on. It'll be really interesting, really good shit.
Just don't say the O word.
Oh?
Orgasm? What?
Anyway. Oh, you know the word I got in trouble for.
Oh.
Eliciting? I don't know. I don't know. Oh, such good podcasting. All right. So have a good night, Dan.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dan.
And with Dan's departure, that means we're now going to be talking about the show that he has sort of kind of given up on watching, I think. But we're still watching it. And, of course, I'm talking about Legends of Tomorrow.
All right, you win. You win. I give. I'll say it. Destiny! Destiny! No escaping! That's for me! Destiny, no escaping, that's for me, destiny, no escaping, Ma.
Dr. Frankenstein, wake up.
What is it?
You were having a nightmare.
Now, we are talking about the next to last episode of Legends of Tomorrow, which was last week, the episode titled Destiny. I think we all made a pact that we would not watch the episode that aired tonight, which was the actual season finale, because next week's podcast is going to cover all the season finale. So everyone who's going to be listening to this, if when we get to any kind of theories or predictions, you'll already know if we blew it or not. So, which is kind of funny, actually. So getting to the episode Destiny, I think we've got to lead off with the big thing in the episode. And that's got to be the stuff with Leonard Snart. Not to mention that whole revolving door of who's going to stay with the bomb that seemed to be going on throughout the episode. I mean, sure, we can certainly talk about Rory because they're kind of a package deal. And you know what? Sarah kind of played a major factor with Snart in this episode. That little oddball coupling seemed to be hearkening back to some stuff we saw earlier in the season, which was kind of nice. So I thought this was kind of like the most interesting stuff in the episode, even though it was briefly connected to the increasingly lame Ray. But really, it's the Leonard Snart stuff and what happened at the end. And which was, I think, a bit of a surprise for people if they didn't already know ahead of time. So, Jason, what was your feeling about all this? Specifically the stuff with Snart, and then, but you can get into the other characters as well if you like.
This was the payoff to the is Snart going to be a hero? Is he going to do the right thing when it all comes down to it? And in the end, he does. He wants to make the ultimate sacrifice to help the team to do, you know, to help them further their goal in stopping Savage and the time stream. Plus, we also got like a secondary payoff between the sexual tension between Canary and Cold as well. But, you know, that felt more like a pity kiss on Canary's part than whatever. But just like, yeah, we're going to you're going to die. So I'm just going to go ahead and give this to you now. but I thought it was a really, really good payoff for Snart. I've been a big fan of Wentworth Miller in this role ever since the first season of Flash. So we know this is not the end for him. He'll be back later, but it was really good. You know, I'd hate to see him go. We know it's not going to happen, but in the meantime, I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, they have already come out and said there's already been an article that he's going to still be a recurring character on both The Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. So, and if he's going to be recurring, I don't think that could just be purely flashbacks. So somehow or other, once again, someone who's supposedly dead isn't, I think. But still, I still thought it was kind of powerful in the moment, especially because I didn't see it coming. Although it did get kind of ridiculous, like, oh, Ray's going to sacrifice himself. Oh, no, wait, Rory's going to sacrifice. No, it's going to be Snart who's going to sacrifice himself. It just seemed to be a little bit weird that they kept it's like musical chairs for that moment or something.
They all want to knock each other out and take one for the team.
And I kept going, can we put one of the Hawks there, maybe? Could Kendra hold on to it? Or maybe Carter? Or but anyway. So, other than that, well, actually, before I move on, Vicky, is there anything you wanted to say about any of these folks? I mean, there's a whole bunch of characters we're talking about here, and I don't want you to pop out right when I start talking about something else. So.
Yeah, no. I was sad to see him go, but it's good to know that he isn't necessarily gone from, you know, the DC comic shows, because I love his character so much. And I think what you're saying is right, that, you know, it was the payoff to, are these guys actually heroes? I think we've seen enough evidence over the course of the season that they are as reluctant heroes as much as they may be. They do have that little bit of goodness inside them. And, you know, I will admit, I wouldn't have been as sad if it had been Ray, just because I don't care for his character as much as I do for, you know, as I enjoy Mick or, you know, Snart. But it was definitely very noble of them. Though I gotta shake my fist at the writers for finally like doing with Sarah and Snart just when they're gonna kill them all. But I mean, I think it was, what they did with their characters was well done. It wasn't the relationship drama that we've had with Kendra and Ray that we've been ragging on. It was just kind of like, oh, do I might like you. No.
Yeah, it's basically like, don't fucking waste our time with this. Because that's not what these characters are about. That's not what the story is about.
Exactly.
It would be weird.
Yeah.
You know, come on.
The full-on relationship would have been weird with their characters, just because that's not who they are. I think how they did it was well done.
Yeah, it's just, it would be needlessly shoehorned in, which they do enough of that crap on the show already. That was one thing they didn't need to do. And I don't think you'd be the only one, and I think we'd be a bit more happy about it, who'd be all that sad if it had been Ray, because as Cade was raging on last week, as was I, fuck Ray. He's just become just... I've grown tired of him. His shtick is worn thin. I don't like the fact that someone who should be as smart as he is constantly does dumb things. It just it doesn't work for me. I don't like it. I don't like this representation of the character. You know, for every good thing that they do with that character and that hero, it seems like they take 10 steps backwards. And I don't know if maybe it was just being tainted by the whole Kendra situation, or, but then again, the whole being a schmuck half the time didn't help matters any. So I was actually, when it looked like he was going to be the one to sacrifice himself, I was like, oh, good. Two birds with one stone. So I actually got I was actually mad when first, I guess it was Mick who took over, and then Snar. I was like, no, you keep making a character I like even more. What are you doing, you bastards? Anyway. However, I will say that I thought there was a little bit of redemption going on in this episode for some other characters who I wasn't too happy about how they've been handling as of late. I thought they finally did right by Firestorm, or at least right by Jax and Marty Stein in this episode. I mean, not maybe so much as the character Firestorm with all the powers and stuff, but just those two characters and how they interact and how they ended up on the Wave Rider and everything else. I much more so than the last few weeks, which I thought was kind of a waste for them. I really, really liked the interactions between the two. And it made me wish that they had been this good with these two characters the entire season. It seemed like it took them forever to get back to these two really being equally good again. At least that was the way I felt about it.
No, you're right, because this felt like the first time where they had a real partnership between the two of them. And you've got that payoff moment when Jackson comes back and they slapped hands together and became Firestorm. It was like a real hero moment. And you're like, well, why can we have this all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And just in general, I felt like the writing on this particular episode was really... was really tight in terms of the action and the way they had everything set up along the way. It felt like a lot like the first episode, and it just made like all the other episodes seem like filler just to get to the end.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with filler on the show. Vicky, you were going to say something?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think kind of what I like, my best kind of my favorite quote or you know whatever from was from when Jax was spelled back in 2016 and he was about to go back to where the rest of the team was, and Stein was commenting on how he can see a difference in Jax, you know, and just how he's changed. So I thought that was at least my favorite part of the story this week with them.
Yeah, he's seen how he's matured. So what the experiences have finally impacted on him. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was nice that there was more than one storyline I enjoyed on in the episode, which has not been the case for a few of these now. Which kind of takes me to the next one. I'm kind of on the fence on this one. So it's actually one of the main thrusts of this episode was the stuff dealing with Rip Hunter and the Time Masters. I mean, we finally get the entire plan of the Time Masters revealed and why they've been working with Vandal Savage, that apparently, you know, I think they say 10 years from 2166 or whatever the heck year it is. There's going to be an alien invasion, it's hysterical that it's the Thanagarians who, anyone who's a longtime fan of Hawkman in the comics, one of the many versions, the Silver Age version of Hawkman, which kind of lasted throughout the Bronze Age up until the Modern Age, was that there wasn't this whole business about an Egyptian prince reincarnation, blah, blah, blah. He was an alien. He was from Thanagar. So it was kind of interesting that they kind of worked that in Whether there's any sort of connection with the Hawks or not, it doesn't appear to be, but it was kind of a strange thing to stick in there, but, you know, whatever. But putting that crazy whatever plan aside, because that's pure exposition and an excuse, so it doesn't really matter that much. The Oculus. Because they come up with this idea that the Oculus is not just this device that can see the future, it's how they kind of it's how they kind of set things. It's how they make things destiny and fate rather than free will. It's kind of a big problem on the show if you really gave it much thought from episode to episode. It's, wait a minute, are things free will or are they destiny? Because they seem to be going back and forth, and they seem to be very loosey goosey about that, quite frankly. But I guess I enjoyed it up to a point. Yeah, I guess I enjoyed it. Jason, it sounded like you liked it because you were talking about the writing being tighter on the show and the action stuff. So you pretty much bought into all the stuff with the Time Masters and this whole storyline?
Well, it felt more like a solution to a problem. Like you said, a problem they had with the whole, why do they need to go to specific points in time to stop Vandal Savage when they could just go to one point in time and they could just wave it off as like, oh, this was our plan all along. That's what I got out of it. I mean, it cleaned up a lot, but it also feels a little lazy.
Yeah.
I felt more like the tighter writing was in the fact that just the characters in general and all the relationships and how they interacted with each other. That's where I got like the tighter writing from.
Got it. Okay. That makes more sense. Okay. Vicky, did you have anything that appealed to you about the Rip Hunter stuff? Or because I mean, he was good. I mean, I thought Rip Hunter was actually good on the episode, and I enjoyed his interaction with the Martin Donovan character, whose the character's name escapes me right at the moment. But
I thought it was. It was definitely a shock, this whole, you know, reveal that basically everything, even their supposed going rogue, was scripted. I don't know if I agree if it, I don't know. I feel a little I thought it was really good, but I also kind of agree that it also did feel like it was maybe just a solution, like Jason was saying.
Here's a problem with it and I'm just spitballing here. So they say that everything's been scripted, because the whole point of everything is that they have Vandal Savage do it here because they need him to be the leader of the world in 10 years to be able to take on this alien invasion, right? That's what they say. Got it. So, then they also say that, hey, you know, we made sure that he was going to kill your family, so you would end up doing all this. But my question is, why? Because if you think about it, Vandal Savage is already the guy in charge and whatever. Why did you need them to do all this stuff? Why? I don't get that. I mean, maybe the only thing I could think of is like when they traveled in time to a few years earlier with the Per Degaton stuff, maybe they ended up moving up his timeline a little bit. I don't know. But other than that, I kept thinking the Time Masters really didn't need to fuck with Rip Hunter at all, because Vandal Savage was already in charge. He was already the dictator or whatever you want to call him. You know, why do all this with all these other characters? It doesn't... We've been talking about, what those of us who have been more negative about the show have talked about, how they don't seem to be really accomplishing very much from episode to episode. They tend to fail, or they tend to have these minimal impacts on the character. And it's revealed later on, well, it turns out Vandal Savage is a time traveler himself, so he can zip around, doesn't really matter. But then you made me think, then a lot of what we've watched doesn't really matter. So I just think they've just shown a major weakness of the season, and maybe that's one of the reasons they're going to recalibrate. And I feel like season two is going to be a do-over for a lot of this stuff, because
I do think it was smart of them to destroy the Oculus, so it basically basically now everything is going without a script, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to laugh. Oh, gee, no. Savage has to do everything on his own now. He can't get help.
Which, therefore, let's get to that ultimate waste of time in the episode, in the show, everything else. Okay. I liked a lot of this episode. I was way more positive about this episode than the previous one, which was pretty much awful. But I'm sorry, I still can't deal with the scenes with Savage and Kendra, and was Carter even in there or not? Or they just kept talking about him? I don't even fucking know at this point. I just want them to go away. I mean, they really minimized their presence in this episode. They concentrated more with the Time Masters and everything else that was going on, which I think was smart. But, oh my god, is there any way they can just make them all go away and that they won't be back after this season? Because it's the worst thing on the show. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, because they're horrible. It's just bad. Enough. I hate them. Go away. Feel free to stick up for them. I won't knock you for it much.
I'm not going to stick up for them.
I know you're not going to.
I'm not sticking up for them. I just don't dislike it as much as you do, I think. He creeps the heck out of me. But, I think that just makes him a little bit more effective villain.
He's okay lately, but the storyline for the season has felt like such a huge waste of time. And I hate everything with the Hawks. Thank you, show, for taking two characters which were among my favorites in comic book history and animation history, and now I genuinely don't like them. Like, I have a Hawkman shirt, I now don't wear it anymore, because I don't want people to associate with this show. Thanks, show. Thanks for ruining it for me. So I can't stand it. I really wish they would not. And then that's why I got so angry with the Leonard Snart thing. It's like, wait a minute. Of all the characters you're going to end up writing out, it's going to be him? The best one on the show? No. Get rid of the worst one on the show. There's a few of them. So that kind of pissed me off.
Feel bad for your Hawkman shirt.
I don't know. I think I'm just hoping that if, Hawkman and Hawkgirl are still on the show next season, that they resolve some of these issues that we've had with them.
Oh, I hope they're vaporized. They're just such bores. I hate everything about their characters now. Just every time I think about it, it annoys me. Anyway, which leads to any kind of theories and predictions for the end of the show. Beyond my wish list of killing off Savage, the Hawks, and maybe Ray as well, quite frankly. I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. Jason, is there anything you kind of foresee or think might happen? Probably earlier tonight, apparently.
All right, here's what I think is going to happen, and I'm probably already wrong, but they're going to wrap up Savage, and they're going to start to delve into who is Rip Hunter. And I think that's going to be the thrust of season two.
Okay. I do think they're wrapping up Savage, because they pretty much have said that, by and large. I don't know if they're going to actually be able to kill him off, even though I have been saying in every episode we've been talking about, we're going to kill off the villain. Because he is an immortal. But again, this whole season was about, but if they use this blade or this necklace or whatever the heck it is, they'll kill him. So I'm thinking, okay, then you're going to kill him. So yay, kill him. Hopefully it kills you at the same time, Hawkgirl. But I kind of feel like they're going to give us a major hint and a half of what season two is going to have in store. Now, keep in mind, there are these rumors of this other actor character showing up who may or may not actually be Alan Scott. So I'm curious if that's going to happen or not. I have no idea. But another thought I had, that maybe something happens so that that Wave Rider, which they've established, you know, can travel through time and can obviously travel, you know, through space to some extent. But maybe the Wave Rider somehow can also travel between dimensions and perhaps, you know, universes. And that could be a way you can connect all four of the CW DC comic shows going into season this coming fall. So that could be it. You know, just throwing it out there as a possibility. I'm trying to expand my mind with these possibilities for these shows right now.
That's a good possibility. I feel like there's a lot of secondary characters laying around the other shows that can still be picked up and gone back to. Like I had a thought today, like, whatever happened to Ted Grant? You know, from Arrow last year, did they just write him out and never go back to him?
You know, they did such a shitty job with him, I don't want them to bring him back. I don't want any character brought back that I thought they did a bad job with, because I don't think that's something going to improve. I don't think Ted Grant's going to suddenly show up in a fucking Wildcat outfit, you know, whiskers and shit, beating up guys on a motorcycle. They already screwed him up. I just don't, it'll be cool, but I don't see it happening. Watch, I'm going to be totally wrong. But, plus, quite frankly, I was like, really? That's Wildcat? Boring. Anyway. Okay, I think that will do it for the three shows that we wanted to talk about this week. You know, as everyone knows, if you enjoy our podcast, you'll probably enjoy us on Facebook. You can find us there at the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. Again, Serious TV Drama Podcast. Subscribe to the feed, rate and review us. Positive reviews are always appreciated. As well as positive feedback on our Facebook page. It's always nice when people comment on things. Just lets us know that people are actually listening. I mean, I know they are. I see the stats, but I like to hear comments too. And finally, speaking of comments, I also like to send out a few via our Twitter feed. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. Now, normally, we would be now making our goodnights and goodbyes here, especially considering how late it is. But something else happened in the world of comic books over the last week, and considering what we generally talk about on this podcast, I feel we would be remiss not to talk about it a little bit as we finish up here. Last week, well-known writer and artist Darwin Cook passed away. He passed away at the age of 53, if I'm not mistaken, from cancer. Now, originally, both Cade and Jason, as well as myself, were going to say a little something about, you know, our fondest, you know, Darwin Cook-related memory. Cade, unfortunately, as we know, couldn't make it tonight. So I can fill in for him just very briefly. What Cade was going to mention was this wonderful revival Darwin Cook wrote and drew, bringing back the classic character, the Spirit, and as a DC Comics character. I did actually read that comic as well. His illustration style matched that character perfectly, you know, between the retro noir feel, etc. It's really an outstanding work, especially in this day and age for a company like DC Comics, which still makes their bones on people running around in, you know, superhero capes and tights. And this is a guy who's basically, you know, in a trench coat and with a little mask, and that's about it. So I got a really big kick out of that. But that was what Cade wanted to talk about. So I should have done that in a Louisiana accent. I forgot to do that. Maybe it's for the best that I didn't, quite frankly. It would have been really bad, trust me, especially at this hour. So, Jason, I know you wanted to say something, and you know, the floor is yours for now.
my biggest influence from Darwin Cook was the DC, the New Frontier miniseries that came out in the mid-2000s. When this miniseries came out, it was a breath of fresh air because DC seemed to be, at this time, to be in a period of where we're just going to maim, kill, and hurt a bunch of a lot of their characters. And who cares? You know, consequences be damned. We're just, this is what we're doing to our characters. New Frontier came along, and it just breathed a fresh new life into the old characters. The art style was awesome. The story was awesome. It was a real retro throwback to how comics used to be. It's sad that we won't get to see anything else like that from this particular artist. I feel like this was a once-in-a-lifetime type of deal. And it's just sad that it happened so quick. This New Frontier, it's not like one of those things that just came and went. You know, it's continued to live on, you know, 11 years, 12 years after the fact, in between countless collections, even an animated TV show, movie, / whatever you want to call it. It just seemed to have that thing like a Watchmen or a Crisis on Infinite Earths where you knew this was something different. You know, this was just not going to go away. And that was his biggest imprint for me.
Well, before I get to mine, can I just say I'm totally on the same page, no pun intended, with you on this, because I feel that The New Frontier is probably the best epic comic book story that I've read, you know, in this century. The fact of telling a story that bridges the gap between the Golden Age and the Silver Age of comic books, and it's done with such love and care for the characters, for the original creators, for that matter. It's just wonderful. My only regret with the animated version was it really should have been probably twice as long to really do that story justice. I always wish they'd, much like they did like a two-part for The Dark Knight Returns, I wish they'd done a two-part animated movie for The New Frontier, because it really deserved it. But absolutely one of the most wonderful things I've ever read. And I love the art style. I loved everything about that. So excellent pick. You couldn't pick something better than that, quite frankly. So, as I was aware you were going to pick New Frontier, I had to go with something else. But it was something that I immensely enjoyed as well. And what I loved was his work he did also back, I think, in 2000. Gosh, I don't remember what year it was now. I didn't write it down. 2002, 03, 04, somewhere around there. His work reinventing Catwoman with the writer Ed Brubaker. I mean, his retro style really was a perfect fit for that character. It had a very noir, gritty crime story kind of approach. And now the look that he helped create there, that leather suit with the goggles, well, that's pretty much been the way Selena Kyle has been depicted ever since, both in, you know, not just cartoons, but in live action. I mean, whether it's the Gotham TV show, Gotham, or even the way, Anne Hathaway's character appeared in The Dark Knight Rises was very much similar to that look. It's a great comic. It especially in a day and age where people aren't going to buy a comic where it's a female lead. Bullshit. Catwoman was a fucking great comic, and those stories were amazing. I highly recommend them. I don't know if they're in a collection anywhere. I think they must be at least in trade paperbacks. So they're definitely worth tracking down as well. So yeah, it's sad that the man has passed away. Like I said, I love the fact that he was someone who was both a throwback as well as a pioneer at the same time. You don't really come across too many creators like that. I also love the fact, something you mentioned, Jason, about how DC Comics had seemed to be mired in, you know, just let's kill people and dark and gritty and whatever. He hated that crap. He got into arguments and fights with people at DC, including the editor, about that stuff. He didn't even see the point of it. So that's why you never saw that kind of thing with any of the work that he produced. It was pretty much the antithesis, if that's even the right word, probably isn't. The anti-modern way that DC was doing things. So it was great that he, at least for a brief time, helped to influence so many other creators, and hopefully will live on. So as we finish up here, we've referred to animation a few times, so I felt it was only appropriate to end the podcast with the music that actually accompanied the opening credit sequence that Darwin Cook actually illustrated and designed for what was a wonderful animated series, Batman Beyond. Did you watch that, Jason? Did you watch Batman Beyond?
No, I really didn't.
You should. It's really worthwhile. If only to get all the way to the final movie that they released, which is called Return of the Joker, which was amazing. But
I saw that one. Okay. I saw that.
Oh, you saw that. So you're a little familiar with it. Anyway. The opening credit sequence was really something wonderful, both between the matching of music to the style of Cook's animation and his ideas. It was really something to behold. So while we can't give you the images, we can at least give you the music. So I just wanted to end the podcast by saying, rest in peace, Mr. Cook. Your art and your spirit, and I don't just mean the character, will absolutely live on.